Okay, today we're learning Kiddushin Lamed Aleph, all about Kibud Av V'Em. Very interesting topics and interesting stories to go with it, as you can imagine, right? Since it's something very relevant, they were obviously going to bring stories from their life. Okay, well, we're going to start from the bottom at the two dots, the second wide line of Lamed Amabet. What were the pnimim about Rachel, Frida, Chaim, Malka, Esther, Bat Zippor, the name of Mirmachai, Ruth, Yosef, and Rachela, Bat Rivka, Paul, Yosho, Palak, and Bracha, Bat Yael, Mirm, Bat Chai, Rina, Chai, Bat Shoshana, Yaakov, and Rosa, Tai, Rachel, Bat Tamar, Sarah, Let's Enter, Ziskin, Ben Menucha, Ulonish, Machana, Bat Tatar, Reza, Bat Sarah, Tzvi, Hirsch, Ben Yaakov, Halev, Umela. Okay, we're going back to the Mishnah where it said, Kol Mitzvot Ha'Aval Ben. So now we're going to ask, My Kol Mitzvot Ha'Aval Ben. If we're going to say that it's all the mitzvah that the father has to do, the son, this is the exact question, we didn't do this together, but that they asked on Daf Kaftet about the other case. It said in the Mishnah, Kol mitzvot ha'av l'ben, it said both nashim and achad ha'nashim ve'achad nashim chayavim. So now they're going to say if it means, right, the pshat of the Mishnah seems to indicate the opposite. It seems to say that all the mitzvot ha'av al ha'ben sounds like things the father's supposed to do for his son. So they say, if that's the case, then how could we say nashim or chayavot? V'ha'atanya, didn't we say already quote this braita? Ha'av chayav b'bino l'molo l'iftoto, aviv in imolo. That only the father is responsible for the brit milah and the pidyon ha'ben, and that would be what you would think is ha'av al ha'ben. So therefore, Amar Rav Yehuda ha'chika, Amar, just like we switched the meaning of the first statement, kol mitzvot ha'ben al ha'av, we're also going to say the same thing. Here we're going to switch it. Ha'chika, Amar, kol mitzvot ha'av ha'mutalot al ha'ben la'asot la'aviv. All the mitzvot that a son is supposed to do for the father. So when it says ha'av al ha'ben, it means things for the father that are al ha'ben to do, that are on the son to do. So now they're going to say all those things, achad anashim ve'achad nashim chayavim. Tanina lahad etan rabbanan. Now they're going to say, we already see this in a braita. Ish, okay, this is from the pasuk, the famous pasuk, ish imo v'aviv tirao, okay, that you have to fear your parents. Ish en li ela ish, isha minayin. Where do we learn the isha? Keshehu amir tira'u harei kan shnayim, ish imo v'aviv tira'u. You should fear, and the you should fear is in plural. So therefore, you should fear includes the women. Im kem matam alomar ish. So why did they say ish if that's the case? Because ish sipek biyado lasot, isha en sipek biyada lasot, mipnei sherashut acherim aleha. Saying it's much easier for the man to do it when he's married, let's say, as opposed to a woman who's married. Because a woman who's married has the reshut of her baal on her, and this is where these halachot come along about. If your husband tells you to do something, or your parents tell you to do something, so the reshut of your husband is more important than the reshut of your parents. Again, in a modern day eye, this is much more, you know, difficult to accept, and maybe also the halacha would be different nowadays. We don't have it viewed as, oh, the woman is in the reshut of her husband and has to listen to her husband and everything he says. But obviously, the idea here is really about balance. You have to strike a balance. Now, obviously, you know, in our modern eye, we would say also the husband should take into consideration his wife's, issues, and therefore, you know, it's a little questionable here the way the Gemara says it doesn't really fit with our view. Yes.
The woman is supposed to honor her parents, but her parents don't have to teach her. So there's that the Ben has to.
So we're going to get into the fact that the father has to teach the son and how that changes the relationship between them rather than a father and a daughter or a mother and a daughter. We're going to see that very soon. Okay? That there's a certain different nature of the relationship because the father is obligated to teach him and the assumption is the father is his teacher, and therefore, generally, when you teach somebody, you, or at least, you know, their approaches, you should have a very disciplined, strict attitude. In fact, we saw this sugya before about how the father would be very strict with the son to teach him. I can't remember what masechet we saw, but there was a whole thing about the father being very strict with the son to teach him Torah. So we're going to see that in another minute. Amrav idi barav and amrav. Nitgarsha shnehem shavim. But if the woman's divorced, or obviously before she's married, right, it doesn't mention that. But once she's divorced, then the man and the woman are exactly equal in terms of their chiyuv. Tana rabbanan. Ne'emar kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, v'ne'emar kabed et Hashem mehonecha. Now we're going to get into the similarities between kibud ave'em and kibud Hashem. Okay, so now they're going to say the psukim seem to connect them because it says the same word, kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, and kabed et Hashem mehonecha. Mehonecha means with your money. Okay, we're going to get into tomorrow's sugya is going to be all about whose money is supposed to be spent for kibud ave'em. Are you supposed to also spend from your own money? So here it says you have to respect God with your money. Hishva katuv kibud av ve'em lichvod ha'makom. Okay, it's considered equated. Now we're going to see not only kibud, but also mora, fear. Ne'emar, ishimo v'aviv tira'ov. Ne'emar, et Hashem lukecha tira'ov, oto ta'avod. Yishveh katu mora'at av v'aim l'mora'at ha'makom. Again, there's kabed is similar, yira is similar, and ne'emar mikalel aviv imo motumat. If you curse your parents, you get killed. V'ne'emar, ish ki kalel elohav, v'nasach et o. So they assume that also means God. Now elohav, some of this could also mean the shoftim. Okay, but here they're understanding it to mean God. He will be punished. Hishveh katub berkata v'em liberkata makom. Berka, by the way, is klala. Okay, it's like the lashon sagina hor. Okay, the opposite. So they say it's also the same. But where's the one difference? Aval b'haka'a v'day i'efshar. Okay, by haka'a you obviously can't hit God. God doesn't have a body that you can hit. So therefore it only appears by the av'em and not by God. And not only that, but it's all logical that we should compare kibud ha've'em to kibud ha'makom, because we say there's three shutafim ba'adam, there's three, right? There's the mother, the father, we're going to read it right now, Tana Rabbanan, shlosha shutafim hem ba'adam, ha'kadosh baruch hu va'aviv imo. Bizman sh'adam ha'chaber et aviv et imo, amar ha'kadosh baruch hu ma'ale ani alehem, ki'ilu darti b'nehem v'kibduni. If you respect your parents, it's as if God says, it's as if I was among you and you also respected me. Because respecting your parents is understanding where you come from and that you come from your parents and also that you come from God. So therefore, if you respect them, you also are respecting God. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Galui v'yadua lefnei mi sha'amar v'haya olam, shebe mechaberet imo yoter me'aviv, mipnei shemishad dalto b'dvarim. Okay, the assumption here is she's nicer to him, basically, right? She's more gentle, more encouraging, okay, as opposed to, which we're going to see right now, the disciplined approach of the father, right? That's the assumption. If the mother's more encouraging with the kids and the father's more of the disciplinarian, because he has to, again, this is with the son anyway, right? That's why it says that the ben is mechabedet imo yoter me'aviv, the son is dafka mechabed his mother because she's so encouraging, where it's sometimes not as easy for him to encourage his father who's so tough with him. Lefichach higdim arkadosh baruch hu kibud av lekibud em. That's why it says kabed et avicha ve'et imecha. Right? I'm sure you've heard this. That the order in ish imo v'aviv tira'u, imo comes first. Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, avicha comes first. So they're going to say that the Torah specified the one that was the least natural. Okay. V'galoi v'yadu alefnei mishamar v'haya olam shabem mityare me'aviv yoter me'amo. And everybody knows that children are more fearful, or the son particularly is more fearful of his father than his mother. Okay, that's why Ishimo Vavitirao comes first, because the assumption is the father's already very strict with him, and therefore he's scared of the father specifically, and that goes back to the Torah, because of their relationship that he teaches him, he's definitely much stricter. Okay, this was in the days where all teachers were very strict and disciplined, right? That was the assumption. Nowadays, maybe you could have different approaches. Not all teachers are, although sometimes the best teachers are the more disciplinarians. Tana kameder Rav Nachman. They brought a bright in front of Rav Nachman. Bizman sh'adam mitza'er. Okay, remember we had, if someone respects their parents, then God is very, right, it's as if, God's saying, it's as if I lived among you and was respected by you. Now we're going to see the opposite. Bizman sh'adam mitza'er t'aviv v'etimo, if he doesn't treat his parents well, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, yafeh asiti shelo darti b'nehem. It's good I wasn't living here. She'umalei darti b'nehem tsi'aruni. I would have been very upset. Right, this is obviously giving human characteristics to God. Okay? But the point is that you're basically also, it's a slap in the face to God, not just your parents. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, kol ha'over avera b'seter ki'ilu dochek ragle ha'shchina. Shneamar, Komar Hashem, Ashamayim Kisiva, Arat Hadom Raglai. So now, Hadom Ragli? Raglai? What would it be? Raglai. Okay, so now, what are we saying here? Anyone who doesn't have Avera B'Seter, it's as if he's pushing the Raglaim of the Shekhinah. Because what does it say in the Pasuk? Haaretz Hadom Raglai, meaning God treads on the Aretz also. He's not just in the Shamayim. And therefore, by you doing something b'seter, why would you do something secretly? You think nobody's going to see. But you're missing the fact, that the point that God sees everything. And that's why it's basically, again, a slap in the face of God. Here it doesn't use the face of, it uses the feet of, right? Because the feet are on the ground. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Asur la'adam she'alech arba amot b'komaz kufa. Okay, so we've moved from Kibbud Av Va'Em. We're now talking about Kibbud HaMakom. We're going to get back to Kibbud Av Va'Em very soon. But right now, we're really focusing on the concept that God is behind everything, right? The same way they're trying to say God is behind your creation. Therefore, God is also behind other things. And therefore, if you walk b'komas zkufa, with your, you know, head turned up, being arrogant, basically, it's saying you can't walk four amot with an arrogant stance, because it says melech al ha'aretz kivodo, that God is everywhere. So you're basically, you know, saying, oh, I'm greater than God. Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yoshua, here we're going to get into now the idea of wearing a kisoy rosh for a man, okay, a kippah, and this is one of the main sources for it. Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yoshua, lo maske arba amot b'giloy harosh, amar shechina lamala meroshi. Okay, he would never walk more than four amot with his head uncovered, because he said, right, the whole idea of covering your head is to have something al harosh. By the way, we saw it the other day, that the guy ran out of the house without a proper kisoy rosh, and he just threw a sheet over his head. So here's another source about it. That, okay, this is obviously not a halacha, right? It's a minhag that developed, and you can even see the way he said it. Like, this guy wouldn't walk without kiloy rosh. It doesn't sound like everybody was doing it. Obviously, as time went on, it became a very prevalent minhag. That, you know, became even more than just a minhag, I would say. But that was the idea, that why do you have a kippah on your head or something over your head? Because to know that the Shekhinah is on top of you. Okay, not to be arrogant. Sha'al ben almana achat et Rabbi Eliezer. The son of an almana asked Rabbi Eliezer, Abba omer hashkeni maim, v'im omer hashkeni maim, eza mehem kodem. If my father says, give me water, and my mother says, give me water, who comes first? What's strange about this? Well, he's the son of an almana, right? He doesn't have a father. Okay? So, anyway, amar le, we'll see, hold off on that. Hanach kvod imecha vase kvod avicha. Sha'ata v'imcha chayavim b'kvod avicha. Okay, here it says explicitly that the same way we saw it before, that the wife is sort of subjugated to the husband, she has to listen to her husband, so when it conflicts with Kibbud Av Va'Em, also, he's saying, because your mother is obligated to respect your father, therefore, you should respect your father first. Ba'lifne Rabbi Yoshua, amar lo, kach amar lo Rabbi, nitgarsha mahu. So he goes for Rabbi Yoshua, he says, this is what he told me, but now, I want to know, what if they get divorced? Then what's the situation? Because then the mother is no longer obligated in respect of the father. Amarle, mibem risei einecha nikar sheben almanata. He says, I can see between your eyelids, I see your tears, and I can tell that you're the son of a widow. In other words, your father's not alive anymore. So what, you know, why are you asking me these questions? So he asks him a little sarcastically, and he says, hatel lahem mayim b'sefel, v'kiakeh lahem ketarnegolim. Okay, so what does this mean exactly? He says, throw water into a cup and call to them like they call to the chickens. Basically, what's he saying? He's saying, treat them equally at that point. Okay, but he's answering sarcastically because he's saying, what are you being a nudnik with all these questions that don't even have to do with you? Okay, which is a strange thing to be saying, because we encourage generally questions and for the sake of learning, even if it's not necessarily relevant for him presently. So anyway, it's a strange answer he gives him. Darash Ula Rabba, apitcha de Beinesia. Ula was darshening at the house of the entrance of the Beit HaNasi. Mai dechtiv yoducha Hashem kol machei aretz, ki shamu imre picha. Here's a strange pasuk. It says, Yoducha Hashem, okay, they will thank you. Who will thank you? All the Malchei Aretz, all the non-Jews, Jewish kings, ki shamru imrei picha, because they heard the words of your mouth. So now they're going to darshan, they're going to say, it doesn't say ma'amar picha lo ne'amar, ela imrei picha. They heard many things that you said, not one thing that you said. So now we're going to have to see why was it many things, and why did it, what they're really going to say is in the end, it took a bunch of things needed to be said until the goyim came around and realized God's presence and God's importance. So what are the things that it said? B'sha'a shamar kadosh baruch hu anochi v'lo yelecha. Okay, God said, anochi lo yelecha. I assume, by the way, that they're assuming the imrei picha referred to the Ten Commandments, because those were the things that we know that God said himself, right? He started saying the beginning of the Ten Commandments and himself. So that's why I assume they assume the Imrei Picha are the Ten Commandments. So first he says, Anochi v'lo yelecha. Amru umot ha'olam, l'chvod atzmahu doresh. Right? That, any any god or ruler is going to say, I'm the only one, and don't have anyone instead of me, because that's what, in order to establish your rule, you have to tell your people, you have to worship me and only me. So they didn't really buy into that, that was something unique. But then, when they heard him say, Kibud Av V'Em, they realized it wasn't all about God. And that it was, basically, I think what it's trying to say is that it was a moral religion, you know, that there were ethics here and about treating your parents properly, and that there was something that the non-Jews recognized, that this is something unique. And that this is something, which is strange, because you might think everybody has this, but in other words, they realize there's something unique about this religion, that this God isn't all about himself. And it's also about teaching you how to be an ethical person and to respect your parents. So therefore, they then went back and said, oh, I guess even the first things he said, and that's why it's Imrei Ficha. They heard a bunch of the commandments. When they got to Kibud Av V'Em, they realized that even the first ones were true. Now we're going to have one more drasha on this. Rava Amar Mehacha. Rava says we're going to learn it from here. Rosh Tvarcha Emet. What does it mean, Rosh Tvarcha Emet? Rosh Tvarcha Velo Sof Tvarcha? What do you mean? Only the beginning of what you said is true and not the end? In other words, everything God says is true. So why would you say is truth? Why would you say Rosh Tvarcha Emet? So what do they say now? Ela Misof Tvarcha Nikarsha Rosh Tvarcha Emet. That's the whole thing. We see from, that's the story. They saw, right, from the end of what God said, which was also truth, that also Rosh Tvarcha was Emet. So it's saying, even Rosh Tvarcha is Emet. And what's the chidush? That originally they thought Rosh Tvarcha wasn't truth. They thought that when he said, Lo Yelecha and Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that it was all about Kavod Atzmo, and it wasn't truth. Only when they heard the end, they realized that Rosh Tvarcha was also true. Pa'am miname Rav Ula. Ad hechan kibud Av V'Em. To what extent do we have to do Kibud Av V'Em? Now you're going to hear the famous story of Dama ben Netina as brought to you in the Bavli. Okay, there's different versions of it. We're going to read this one. Amar lahem tsuru ma'asau ve'kochavim echa ba'ashkelon. Okay, so when they want to, right, this is always the famous thing. Why, particularly if we just said, this is what's interesting, if you notice this, the story of Dama ben Netina, which we always say, why are we bringing a story of a non-Jew? Right, that's always interesting that you're bringing a story from a non-Jew. And we just said a minute ago, the Umot HaOlam recognized God's greatness when he said, Kaveh Tavicha Ve'atimecha, right? And now it's kind of saying that the non-Jews themselves knew how to do it the best, right? Or that this Dama ben Netina. So it's interesting that there's all this relationship to other nations and how they view this, right? In the first story, it seemed like maybe the other nations don't care about this too much. And now this story is after stressing the opposite, which is they know how to do this, Kamo Shetzarich. Tzuru ma'asau ve'kochavim echa ba'ashkelon. V'dama ben Netina shmo, that's his name. Pam achat bikshu chachamim pragmatia b'shishim ribo sachar. V'ayam avtech munach tachat meroshotav shel aviv. They wanted to do some business deal for 600, right? Shishim ribo is 600,000 sachar, right? That's a lot of money. And the mafteach of where he needed to get to the staff was under the head of his father, and his father was obviously sleeping, v'lo tziaro, and he didn't wake him up. Am Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, shalu et Rabbi Eliezer at hechan kibud Av V'Em. Here we're going to see that they asked Rabbi Elezer, and he told a different version of the story. Okay, there was machloga. Was it shishim ribo? Was it shmonim ribo? And they wanted avanim for the ephod. Okay, there's a different version which says they wanted the avanim for the choshen, right? One is the shoulder plate, that's the ephod that the Kohen Gadol wore, and the other was for the choshen, for the 12 stones that he wore. Both of them had stones on them. And v'hayam avtech munach tacha meroshotav shel aviv v'lo tziaro, and he didn't wake him up. L'shana acheret natan hakadosh baruch hu scharo shenolda lo para aduma be'edro. Okay, the sachar he got was that the para aduma was born in his eder. Nichnesu chachmei Yisrael etzlo. Amar lehem, right, the para aduma was obviously very rare, and therefore they were willing to pay a lot of money for it. Amar lehem, yodani b'chem, shim ani mevakesh kol mamon shebaolam atem notnim lo. Ela ein ani mevakesh mikem, ela oto mamon shefsadeti b'shvil kvod abba. Okay, I only asked the money that you were willing to give me last year that you didn't give me because I didn't wake up my father. There's another version, by the way, that what happens, that they wait till the father wakes up, and as they offer him, they think that he's not giving it to them because he wants more money, so they keep negotiating a higher price, and then eventually the father wakes up, And he says, I'm only going to give you the lower price. In other words, he's saying, I wasn't trying to negotiate with you, just I wasn't saying no because I wanted more money. It was just that I was waiting to wake up my father, and he wasn't willing to take more money. And then he got rewarded in some other way. What's interesting about this story is, you know, the whole big question is, what do you mean? Doesn't the father, right, isn't it, what do you think happens when the father woke up and saw he lost this huge business deal, right? Wasn't the father upset? So the Sefer Hasidim says that obviously this wasn't a case where the father really, you know, the father didn't care so much whether the son got the business deal or not. Like, for whatever reason, it wasn't important to him. Maybe they had enough money, or maybe, you know, that. And he says, la halacha, that if you think that your father would be upset that you didn't take the business deal, either because the, like, your money and your father's money was somewhat together, or your father was concerned for you to have a lot of money, then you should definitely wake up your father. Okay, so it's very interesting. The Sefer Hasidim takes this and says, well, don't learn from this that you should never wake up your father. Depends on the circumstance. If your father in the end would have woken up and would have been upset with you, then you should. Which is an interesting, you know, approach to the story, because we always look at it as, you know, this is... anyway, I thought that was interesting to point out. Okay. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Uma mi she'enu mitzuve va'ose, kach mitzuve va'ose alacha kama v'kama. So now, what do they learn from this story? If this Ovei Kochavim is not commanded in the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, and look what reward he got. So, right? Kach mitzuve v'osa alacha kama v'kama. To Amar Rabbi, this is Chanina. I don't know what it says there. From Rabbi Chanina, I assume. Yeah. Gadol mitzuve v'osa mi she'eino mitzuve v'osa. Those who are commanded and do it are greater than those who aren't commanded. Now, this is a whole question. Why is that the case? Right? The main obvious answer is it's always easier to do something when you're not commanded to do it, right? When you do of your own initiative, it's not as difficult to do something when you know you have to do it. And that's part of the concept of being subjugated to God. You have to do His command. So if you don't have to and you decide to do it, well, that's great. And you should get reward. And the assumption here, by the way, is he just says, Gadol ha-mitzuvev oseh. He doesn't say the other guy doesn't get any reward, the eino mitzuvev oseh. Right? And this is very relevant, by the way, to mitzvot aseh shasman grama. The women of Pturoth that we're going to get to soon. The women of Pturoth from mitzvot aseh shasman grama. It's not to say they don't get rewarded for doing it, but their reward, according to the text here, are considered less than those who do it because they are commanded. Okay, this is, I'll give you a good example. Okay, if you go to girls' high schools where they teach Gemara, okay, which are not, unfortunately, so many, but in general, the whole trend over the last 20 years or so has been to start including more Gemara in the curriculum for the girls, and for the boys, it's been to decrease the curriculum of Gemara, because the boys have been commanded to do it, and they don't like it. It's like me'ika lehem, you know, they have to, and there's this huge crisis. Like in all these... you know, open Orthodox journals, there's all these articles, certainly, like, I remember 10 years ago, there were all these articles. Now, the crisis of boys learning and what we do, and on the other hand, the huge interest of girls in, you know, in starting to learn more. So it's, and it fits into this model of Mitzvah Vosa. You have to, it's not enjoyable. When you don't have to, but you come to it on your own, it's a little easier to do it. So that's what they're saying. The reward is a little bit less because... you know, and obviously how much less, you know, we don't know what is reward, and that's a whole separate question, right?
Why would you think it would be the opposite? It's so easy to do what you're commanded to do, but somebody who goes beyond, I mean, I would think it would actually be the opposite.
Right, so you could make an argument for the opposite. You could definitely make an argument for the opposite, and by the way, just because Rabbi Chanina says this doesn't necessarily mean everyone agrees with it. Now, we're going to see a story, okay? Well, let's read the story, and then we'll talk about that on the backdrop of the next story. I'm Rav Yosef. Do you remember Rav Yosef? He was blind. Remember that about him? Mm-hmm. So Rav Yosef says, Meresh hava amina manda. I thought that manda amrali halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda da amar suma patur mina mitzvot avina yom tova l'rabbana da ha lo mifkidna v'ha avdina. Okay, so what did he say? He said, originally I thought there's a machloka whether a suma is chayv mitzvot or patur mitzvot. Okay, someone who's blind. Is he chayv mitzvot? Is he patur mitzvot? So he said, originally I thought that if you were to tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda who says he's patur mitzvot, I would have made a big celebration. Why? Because dehalo mifakdina, I'm not commanded, and b'havidna, and yet I do the mitzvot. So like I'm on this high level, exactly as Sherry said. I'm like in a much better place because look, I'm not even commanded. Look how great I am, what I'm doing. Hashta deshamita lahada amar Rabbi Chanina, gadol mitzvot ve'oseh yoter mimi she'eino mitzvot. Now I'm going to say the opposite. Now that I learned his halacha, Man d'amrli de'ein alachak Rabbi Yehuda. If you tell me the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, then I'll be yoma tova l'rabbanan. Okay? Then I'm better off being chayiv in mitzvah because I'll get more reward. Okay? Now, yes, you could make the argument, the flip, like he wanted. You know, he thought originally that would make the most sense. So there's logic to be said both ways. Rabbi Chanina doesn't agree. Now, again, whether other people agreed or disagreed is a whole separate question, right? It could be there were people who said it, but because he's the one who's quoted, so he's the one. Now, you could say that's taken halacha l'maaseh. Now, what's halacha l'maaseh? There's no halacha l'maaseh here. In other words, we don't know what the real sachar is. This is people determining what they think the reward is for various people. We don't really know what the reward is for various people. But I guess there would be halacha l'maaseh in a sense if there was a conflict of interest or, you know, what one should do. And that's where people might say, oh, women aren't commanded to learn, so maybe they should do the things they are commanded to do and not the things they aren't commanded to do. And, you know, there's all sorts of... even when I was teaching in Pelech in Jerusalem, they had a whole thing. The girls wanted to start laning in the mornings. So what happened in those days, they didn't have mincha in school. So a bunch of the girls, and I was on that frame of mind, which is that women are chayavot, whether or not you know this, in two tefillot a day, according to Ashkenazi psak. Okay, they're chayav in shacharit and mincha. And most people don't know that. Most people think women are chayavot once a day, and that's based... The Rambam says a woman could just say one tefillah, even like a shevach bakasha and hoda'ah, but that's Sfaradim. Ashkenazim paskin, and it's brought down the Mishnah Berurah, that you have to say shacharit and mincha. So some of the girls said, well, maybe we should start doing mincha first before we start doing things that we're not commanded to do. Let's do the things we are commanded to do. And in fact, they started having a mincha slot. They gave an extra 5 minutes. I know that's an extra 5 minutes for lunch break so the girls could have a mincha, you know. They didn't make a chovah. Maybe they should have, but they at least did that. And then, you know, and at that point, they decided not to have the Kriyat HaTorah. They wanted to do like a Kriyat HaTorah Rosh Chodesh. Years later, they eventually instituted that. But in other words, there, a bunch of the girls said, you know, why should we be, we should first start with what we're commanded to do. Now, you can make, again, the flip argument. Maybe you'll come to do what you're commanded to do when you feel more connected and when you do other things. You know, so there's arguments to be made either which way. And again, there's sort of halacha l'maaseh related to this about what your mitzvah bebo say or not. But again, Rabbi Chanina is one opinion, as possible there's others. I always think about it with my kids, and you know, when they volunteer to do the dishes, they're interested in doing it. When you ask them to do the dishes, they don't really want to do it, right? It's the same kind of thing. Now, what Shari's saying is you can make the opposite argument, which is people like to have a framework. They like to know what exactly they're supposed to do. Like, take a bat mitzvah. It's sometimes much harder to plan a bat mitzvah because it's open. You don't even know what to do. You have so many possibilities, and there's no clear path about what it is you're supposed to do when it comes to a boy's bar mitzvah. So it basically follows a very clear pattern, for better or for worse, right? For some kids, that's actually not a great pattern to follow. For some kids, you know, it's just easier. It's simpler to plan. When you have to plan something and it's open-ended, or write a creative writing essay about anything, it's very difficult. It's almost easier to have a structure. So there's arguments to be made in all directions. Kiyatar of Dimi Amar, Pamachat Hayalavush Sirkon Shel Zahav. He was wearing this cloak of gold, Vahaya Yoshev Ben Gedolei Romi, and he was sitting among the great people of Rome. Ubata Imo, and his mother showed up, okay? Here he is sitting in this fancy gold cloak with the great people of Rome, and what did she do? Kira Atomi Menu, Vitapchalo Al Roshovi, Arkalo Bifanav. Okay, she tears his coat, she slaps him in the face, and she spits in his face. And Lo Hichlima. And what did he do out of respect for her? He didn't say anything. He just took it. Okay? And we're going to see further on that this is perceived as like a higher level of kibud av va'em, that you take, you know, tochacha from your parents and you don't lash back at them and you don't say anything and you just take it. Okay? Keep it in mind. Tani avimi...
Here in Yaakov, it wasn't just passive because her shoe fell off and he handed it back to her.
Right, there's some other version, right? It's another version that her shoe fell off and he hands it back to her. And right, you can see how this story gets embellished, right, in different versions. You can see all these stories. They come up in different versions. We can see another one about a similar thing, and it also has different versions to it.
And once again, he's not even Jewish. Why are they...
No.
They said he's a righteous Gentile.
Ki ata Rav Dimi amar pam achad haya lavush sirkon shel zahav. What? No, we're talking about Rav Dimi now.
No. This says Dama. That it was Dama, the son of Natina, who's
Oh, it was the story of Dama ben Natina. Oh, I missed that. Okay.
But once again, we're drawing examples from...
Right, we're drawing examples from non-Jews. Exactly. Okay, right, you're right. It's Dama ben Natina, right. By the way, you could see how this Dama ben Natina became a legend, right? And all these stories are surfacing about him. The obvious question is, Did Dama Ben Netina exist? Right? Notice his name is Ben Netina. You think a guy's name is Netina, you know, Netina? Anyway, you have to think about, Dama, by the way, is like Damim, money. So, interesting, right? So, you know, is he a fictional character or did some sort of guy exist who maybe did something and they built him into, right? They had all these different legends about him and different embellishments upon the story. Was it Shishim Revo? Was it Shmonim Revo? This is how stories get told. Again, the whole idea is to bring a message, but okay, so fine. Thank you for pointing it out. There was Dama Ben Netina.
And his story follows suit for what they just said because it, as you just pointed out, he's not Jewish. He wasn't commanded to keep it out of the hand.
Right, he wasn't even commanded, and yet
he's doing it. So is he greater
right.
because he
and
wasn't
we're
commanded?
All of our
right, what's interesting is, right, exactly. So the whole thing is that we're putting him, so again, the Gemara took him and said, based on Rabbi Chanina, we're going to say, if these are the rewards that he got, well, wow, we must be getting even much greater rewards. Now, they used it as a way to show how great would our rewards be if we actually did this commotion ceremony?
Right.
I still think it's fun.
But it is. It's very right. It's very strange. Exactly. It's very strange that they found an example from someone from the outside, and why they couldn't find someone from the inside. Although we'll see. And what's interesting, and maybe this is also, we'll see when we get to Rabbi Tarfon, and they're critical of him, and that's Rabbi Tarfon, right? One of the greats of the greats. It could be that we're more self-critical of ourselves than of non-Jews, and maybe that's why it's easier to take someone from the outside rather than someone from the inside. And maybe there's something to that.
I'll just add one other thing. Something that I read by Ralph Salanter is that when you praise somebody, you run the risk of opening up to criticism. Oh, you think he's so good? Well, let me tell you the truth. And so if you take a non-Jew, it takes it.
And if you take someone who maybe doesn't even exist, well, the more so. That's very good. Right. I think what Ani's saying is a very good point, which is it's better to take some fictional character and make him into a great person that nobody knows and can start criticizing. Right? People say, there's this joke about Lashon Hara, you know, everyone sits around the Shabbos table speaking Lashon Hara, and, you know, so people, the reason they have chulent is a joke. The reason they have chulent is so that people talk about the chulent, you know, and not about other people. So then they say, no, but once you start talking about chulent, this one makes this kind of chulent, and that one makes that, you know. Anything can lead to Lashon Hara eventually. So maybe that's why they took this guy so that no one's critical, because you're going to see that they're very critical of Rabbi Tarfon, right? Okay, so it's interesting. So keep that in mind. Tane avimi bereid Rabbi Abab. Yesh machil avi pisione v'tordo min ha'olam. This reminds me of what my parents always says. They used to tell them when I was growing up, it's your tone of voice, right? Like, what was wrong with what I said? But it's your tone of voice. It's how you said it. So there's a way to do things and a way not to do things. You could give your father the nicest, this is pheasant, okay, pistione. You give him a nice piece of meat, and yet you could be doing something terrible. And you could make him work hard at the millstone and yet bring him to Chaya Olam Haba, because it's all a matter of how you treat them and what you do. Just giving them nice meat doesn't necessarily mean that you're treating them properly. Like if you throw it in his face and say, here, take it, you know, that's not helpful. Amar Rabbi Avau, kigon avimi birei, kiye mitzvat kibud. Okay, so now Rabbi Avau is praising his son about how well he did mitzvat kibud. Chamisha b'nei samche havolela avime b'chaye aviv. There were five. Now, it's unclear what the samche is. Some people say there were five people who were somech al shulchano, who ate at his table, or maybe he had these five sons. And, okay, while his father was alive, b'chi haba'ate Rabbi Avau, kari abava, when he heard Rabbi Avau banging on the door, knocking on the door, rahit va'azalu patachle, he would run and be the first to open it. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't tell it right. There's Rabbi Avau, who's the, we'll talk about him as the grandfather, really, because then there's Avimi, who's the son, and then Avimi had five sons or five people who were somech al shulchano, like, you know, bnei bayit, who were living in his house, right? Lone soldiers or, right? Something like that, right? Five people who were living in his house. And every time his father would come to the door, he would be the one to rush to open it, right? How many times do we say to our kids, go get the door, go answer the phone, go, right? He would do it himself. Va'amar, not only would he go open the door, but he would say, in, adamate hatam. He would say, I'm coming, so that the father wouldn't think that he was being ignored, right? How many times, my kids always, right, they knock and no one answers right away, and they knock again, you know, I'm like, wait till they get to the door. So he didn't want his father to be waiting there thinking, maybe nobody heard me. So he would rush to the door, and as he would do so, he'd be screaming, I'm coming. Yom achad, one day, amarle eshkeyam maya. He said, bring me some water. Ada'aitele nimne. By the time he got back, the father had already fallen asleep. Gachin kayale adi itar. He bowed down and like stoop down in front of him until he woke up, because he didn't want to miss the opportunity to give him water. Istaya milta, and his reward was v'darash avimi mizmor la'asaf. While he was waiting there, he was able to darsh him mizmor la'asaf, which was apparently some mizmor, or Rashi claims, according to one interpretation, it was just the first pasuk, mizmor la'asaf, that he couldn't understand properly, but he finally understood it. Okay, that God helped him to have the siyata d'shmaya, basically, to understand what this pasuk meant. Okay, I'm not going to get into right part. Rashi says that the problem is it says, mizmor la'asaf, Elohim ba'u goyim b'nachalatecha, which sounds like it should be kina la'asaf and not a mizmor la'asaf, because it's about ba'u goyim b'nachalatecha. The goyim came and conquered, right, took over. It should be a kina, not a mizmor. Anyway, so exactly the connection between mizmor la'asaf, I can't tell you exactly why specifically that was something he was rewarded with. Amar le Rav Yaakov. So here's a story where dafka someone's perceived positively, and it's a model of kibud avim. Amar le Rav Yaakov baravu alavaye, kigon ana, like me, da'ad atina mi bei rav abba madle le kisa. No, 1 second. Mi bei rav abba madle le kasa v'ima mazgali. Right. That. So he's saying. By the time I come home from learning, right, what happens? The boy comes home from yeshiva. And what happens when he gets home, right? What do you want to do to your kid when they come home from yeshiva, from the army, whatever, right? What do? You immediately start giving them food and, oh, take this, right? So the Abba Madle like Kasa, the father poured him a cup, and Ima Mazgali, and the father poured the wine, and the mother had done the, right, poured in the water. Hechiyavi, what am I supposed to do? In other words, am I allowed to, here I'm supposed to be respecting them, and here the parents are doing things for me. And what he's really getting at is the constant struggle we have between, yes, we want to do things for our kids, but we want our kids to respect us, right? And where's the balance? Amar Lei gives him an interesting answer. Me'imcha kabil u'me'avucha lo tekabil. You can accept what your mother does for you, but not from your father. De'kevan de'bar Torahu chal shadate. Because he teaches you Torah, so it's going to weaken him if you're going to take it, you know, it's gonna like mess him up in terms of your relationship, basically. Because he's gonna start giving you things, and yet he's supposed to be your teacher and the kapdan, right? The whole disciplinarian, it's not gonna work very well. Whereas your mother, like we said, she's mishadal tov b'dvarim, and you know, it's a whole different relationship. So you can accept from her without ruining the relationship that you have. Which again is an interesting, this whole male female distinction is obviously difficult for us to fathom. Here we now get to the story of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon havalayahi ima, he had a mother, to call ema to have a bai lemesak lepuria, whenever she would go to get into bed, gachin v'salikla, he would bend down and she would climb on, use his back to get into bed. V'chol ema to have a nachit, nachta ilave. Whenever she would go down off the bed, she would go down using his back. Ata v'kam mishtabach be midrasha. He went to the Beit Midrash and praised himself and said, look, right, okay, so now, there's obviously two versions to this story. One version is that he didn't praise himself at all, and that it was his mother, who I think he was sick or something, and she came and said, pray for him, and you know, look how great he is, that he did kibud avim for me like this. Or something, I forget exactly the exact version. This version is that he went to the Beit Midrash and praised himself because he viewed himself as a rabbi who has to set an example for his students, and he's telling them, this is what I do for my mother, you should do the same. Let's hear their reaction. Amar Lei, adayin lo higata lechatzi kibud. Okay, very interestingly, right? That's why this version is a little difficult. Either which way, whether he said it or the mother said it, okay? In the end, they say, this isn't even half of kibud avim. Okay, this is easy. Klum zarka anar kibifanecha leyam velo ichlimta. Did she take your money bag, throw it into the water, and you didn't do anything about it? Like the Dama Benatina story, right? Where they embarrassed him, and yet he didn't even respond. Saying, that is the ultimate kibud avim. Which is very interesting, because they're saying the ultimate kibud avim is in a case where your parents are disrespectful to you, and yet you still have to respect them. Now, they're praising this as an ideal. Now, obviously, the ideal is to never get to that situation. We don't want parents who are doing that to their children. So it's almost like unfair, because they're saying the best way to get there is a way that you don't really want to take that path. You don't want to have parents who do disgusting things to you and embarrass you, and yet you don't respond at all. On the other hand, you might say that if you take this extreme, but like let's put it to a regular, right? How many times do we do things that our kids get upset about? And that really this is an everyday occurrence between parents and kids, where the parents do something and the kids start screaming back and no, blah, blah, blah. And maybe it's really an everyday occurrence, and the Gemara is just giving these extreme examples to show that the real kibud av ha'em is your parents tell you something you don't really want to hear, and yet you tolerate it anyway. So maybe it, you know, on the one hand, it sounds like a very crazy occurrence. On the other hand, maybe it's really reflective, giving an extreme case to really reflect an obvious reality that kids don't always want to do exactly what their parents say, and yet they're commanded, despite that, to respect their parents. We all know how complicated the mitzvah of kibud av ha'em, right? It's not as simple as the Dama ben Natina story. And what I like about the Gemara is they're getting into the complications of it and how difficult it is and how it's not always simple and how you'd rather send your kids to the door to get it and, you know, be lazy and sit around. And you'd rather, you know, if your parents embarrass you, you know, your natural reaction is to speak back. And yet they're saying, despite that, you have to overcome that and go on. Do you want to say something?
They're giving a very complex lesson, though, to children. Because
it is complex.
Because you have abusive parents almost.
Right. So if you take it to the extreme, right, if you take this extreme case about abusive parents, right, then it obviously gets very complicated. And where do we draw the line between abusive parents and, right, and then are they still commanded or not? So this seems to imply that they are. But you have to wonder if there is a line. I didn't look up halachot about it. It would be interesting to research what the halacha is if your parents are really abusive to you. Here they're not talking physical abuse, but verbal abuse is just as bad as physical abuse, exactly, or worse, exactly. So, but that's in our modern eye. In their eyes, I'm not sure that they saw things that way. You know, so I'm sure there's stuff written about it. Anyway, it'd be interesting to look up. Okay. Rabbi Yosef, ki avashama kal kare de'ime, when he would hear his mother's footsteps, amar ekum kame shchina de'atya. Okay, remember, he was blind. So obviously when he hears his mother's footsteps, right, and he knew because obviously his hearing was good. Through his hearing, he was able to sense it was his mother. So he would immediately get up and say, I'm going to get up in front of the Shekhinah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now we get to what happens when a person doesn't have parents at all. So what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to learn, didn't have parents. Ashrei mi shelo chama'an. Blessed is the one who doesn't even have parents, who never got to see his parents. Because, what's he saying? It's such a complicated mitzvah that I'm almost better off that I didn't have parents. Okay? Very difficult statement. Rabbi Yochanan, now we're going to tell the background. Ki brato imo meit aviv. When his mother got pregnant, when she conceived, the father died. Yiladito, when she gave birth, meito imo. She died in childbirth. V'chein abai, and abai is the same thing. And then they say, really? Abai? Ini? V'hamar abai, amar li'em. Doesn't abai say, my mother told me? Ah, they say, hahi, we already know this. Meravinte have. She was his omenet. She took care of him, his foster mother. Rav Asi, havale ahi ima zakena. Okay, Rav Asi had a very old mother. Amrale, Bi'ina Tachshitin, she said, I want jewelry, Avadla. He made her. Bi'ina Gavra, she wanted to get remarried. Na'ayin lach, I'll go find you someone. Then she said, Bi'ina Gavra, de Shapir Kavatcha. I want a husband that's just as beautiful as you are. Shavka Ba'azil Arad Yisrael. He got up and moved to Israel. Okay, what did he say? He said, okay, this is a very difficult story. What did he say? According to the way that I'm afraid to understand, he realized she was crazy. She was going senile. In other words, what he understood, I guess, is she wants to marry someone as young as he is. Okay? And that's crazy. Like, she's not going to marry someone as young as me. So he realizes his mother's senile. And what the difficult part of the story is, the assumption is, like, he can't really take care of her anymore. And he goes off and he moves to Israel. Now, it could be, you could say, maybe he was waiting to move to Israel until his mother was no longer alive. Right? We all know those struggles about parents and can you make aliyah and leave older parents at home. And maybe he was waiting, and at that point he realized she was senile, and I guess in those days they viewed someone as senile as avud, you know, like that was it.
This assures this. He says, Rabbi, he is assuredly arranged for somebody to take care of his mother before he left.
Right, right, exactly.
But
you got to assume. Anyway,
parents.
So, right, exactly. They might have just left them, exactly. A child who was disabled, you know, also. They didn't necessarily. Well, we saw that sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But again, their view about these people was different. Shamadika Azla Batre. He heard that she was coming after, that she was going to come to Israel. Okay, it's unclear whether this happened a long time later, right after, that she was following him. We don't know. Atalakamej Rabbi Yochanan. He goes in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, interestingly enough, he asked Rabbi Yochanan, he didn't have parents, right? You have to think about who's the best person to answer a question if, right? There's a whole bunch of things about this psak he gets from Rabbi Yochanan. But number one, interestingly enough, he goes to someone who didn't even have parents to ask this question to. Amarle, ma'ulatse me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. Can I go to chutz la'aretz? would he seemingly want Jewish to go greet his mother as a sign of respect. He heard she was coming, so even though he left her behind, he felt like, okay, I'm going to go bring her. Amar le asur. He says you can't. Now notice he doesn't say for my mother. He just asks, can I go to Chutz La'aretz? Now Rabbi Yochanan says, now here's a whole other thing. What, are you not allowed to ever leave the land, right? Maybe yes, maybe no. Okay, so he says you can't leave. Likrat imamahu, what if I'm going to greet my mother, can I? Amar le eini yodea. I don't know, he says to him. Very strange. Etrach porta, he came back, and as he left, he waited a little bit of time, and he came back. Hadar ata, and as he waited a little bit, porta's a little bit, hadar ata, he went and came back to Rabbi Yochanan to ask him again. Maybe now you know the answer. Amar le, asi nitratzeta latzeit, hamakom nitratzeta, he says, asi nitratzeta latzeit, I see you really want to go. Hamakom yachzir chala shalom. God should return you in peace. Okay, very unclear answer. He doesn't know what to do now. He doesn't understand what he meant. Anta the kamei to Rabbi Elazar. He comes to Rabbi Elazar. Instead of asking Rabbi Yochanan, what exactly did you mean, right? He goes to Rabbi Elazar. Amar le, chas v'shalom, dilma mirtach rata. Maybe, now you see why he didn't go back to Rabbi Yochanan. He said, maybe he's angry with me that I even asked the question. Amar le, my amalcha, what did he say to you? Amar le, hamakom yachzircha l'shalom. Amar le, v'im ita diratach, lo hava mevarech lach. Says if he was really angry at you, he wouldn't have given you a bracha. He said, "Hamakom yachzir chala shalom." That's a bracha. Okay, so it sounds like okay, he could go. Okay, get the end of the story. Adahachi bahachi shama la arona dekaate. He hears that his mother's aron is coming. Okay, in other words, he dilly dallied and asked all these questions. And in the end, his mother died. We saw, by the way, another story like this with Abaye, with the Rechaim or something. I forget exactly the story. But he busy asking all these questions. In the end, I forget, but like it was a moot point. In other words, he didn't do it right. I forget what it was. It was about some Rechaim and the thing fell apart or something. I don't remember exactly. I think it was in Shabbat. But Amar, Iyade, and now, okay, so now you think the punchline of the story is this. He should have hurried. He should have just gone and not started asking all these questions and blah, blah, blah. He should have also asked this question more directly in the beginning. Right here, he asked the question. Rabbi Yochanan answered not right. He didn't really know. He had to ask a second level question. Anyway, what does he say? Amar, iyade lo nafke. Had I known this, I never would have even gone out. Even stranger answer, right? He said, I wouldn't have even left to go, right? I wouldn't have even left to go to get my mother. So, and this seems to imply that you don't necessarily need to respect your parents in their death, which is also very strange. We're going to get to that tomorrow. What's the responsibility of kibud in their death? And anyway, very strange story, strange middle, strange ending, strange in terms of Piskei Halacha Rabbanim, like maybe Rabbi Yochanan should have asked better questions to figure out really what he was looking for. If you assume that Rabbi Yochanan did let him go, what you do see in terms of the Pesach is when he saw he really, really wanted to, he was more decisive at that point. In other words, and that also can affect your Pesach Halacha, seeing how much the person really wants to do it. Anyway, food for thought. We'll continue tomorrow.